Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
Hello and welcome. Awfully glad you joined us tonight here on Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and just the way, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Billy, how you doing?
I'm good. George is one of my best friends, which gives you a little bit of an idea how much difficulty I have making friends.
Sad.
It's horribly sad.
Yeah. I didn't get your payment for this month yet.
You'll get it.
Okay.
I'm doing PayPal now. It should direct account into your account.
Yeah, you look good.
Thank you, George, as do you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you had a nice clean bill of health recently?
I got a clean PET scan,
whatever it's called.
PET scan, so I have 6 more months.
You think.
Well, until you said that, yeah. No, but, you know, it's been a great thing, and I've never felt better. I've never been happier, and it's been a real blessing. And now that I have the blessing, let's keep the cancer gone.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. George,
you lost some money, though. You had the pool.
I know. I had to send Vegas $10 when you had a clean scan.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to dwell on negative things. Let's talk about what's going to be.
I don't think my living is negative. I mean, obviously,
it
you
is
do.
For some.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about tonight's show, which is going to be awesome. We have Jay joining us from Ogden, Utah. He is a full-time recovery pastor at a church called the Genesis Project in Ogden. So that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I know a little bit of the story, and I'm so excited to get him on, and it's going to be great.
Cool. Well, welcome to Real Recovery. If you are just new to the program, where have you been? Because we're like in our 8th year.
Yeah, we are. That's coming up next month.
Yeah.
Do we have an exact date? Because I never wrote it down. Did you?
17 or 25 or something like that.
Okay, it's close. Yeah.
So if you know anything about our show, we talk about recovery from addictions of all kind, and it's done through the power of what's so funny?
The whole thing that we're still on. We didn't even write it down.
I'm trying to start out a sentence.
I know you are.
And you're interrupting me.
I am. Sorry.
So why don't you tell what real recovery is?
Well, what it is. What it is to me. We think real recovery involves Jesus. And as Bill was getting to before he was so rudely interrupted,
thank you,
is that you can stop a behavior, a drug, a gambling, sex addiction. But if you don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, you don't have forgiveness of your sins. You don't have eternal life. You don't have real recovery. And Bill, the whole purpose of our show is to not stop a behavior. It's to develop a relationship with the living God who loves you and has a plan for your life.
And also one of the things we try to do every week on Real Recovery is we like to talk about one of the 12 steps of recovery. And, George, I think you've got something all prepared for tonight, which is kind of interesting to me because you hardly ever prepare.
No, it's been a lifetime of preparation that comes up woefully short every week. But I was with a friend of ours, Glenn R., who we've worked with at the Salvation Army, and it was the celebration of his 21st year of sobriety. And we were talking about step 7, and, of course, that's humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And we were talking about humility, and really what we're looking at, the basic ingredient of all humility is a desire to seek and do God's will. We never thought of making honesty, tolerance, and true love of man and God the daily basis of our living. And the real problem is with humility is, what am I going to get out of this? We come into recovery to get out of jail, to get our family back, to keep our job, to get everybody off our back. But hey, I'm giving something up. What do I get out of this? Well, that's a reflection of our problem. If we just stop the behavior and get our stuff back, the reason we got into the problem was we put ourselves above God, that we were living for ourselves. And the humility is, I see who I am in proper relation to who God is. And I don't think we can really see ourselves, Bill, and I'd love your input on this, until I can see who Jesus is.
I couldn't agree more. A lot of the time, you look to God as helping him help you solve your problems, and that's sometimes the wrong approach. I mean, he will help solve your problems, but if you don't come to worship him and surrender your life to him, it's probably not going to be an authentic sort of conversion.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think for me in my life, I've used him as a bush league pinch hitter. To bring in when I'm losing in the last of the ninth and I need a home run. Rather than waking up every day, our first thought, what would you have me to do today for you? And I think for most of us in recovery, we start out thinking about, okay, what am I going to get out of this? I'm giving something up, but I need a new change here. And it's kind of like, as Glenn says, it's like watching the movie The Wizard of Oz. It's in black and white until the color comes on. The problem we have for most of us is we don't get the good stuff until a little bit down the road. And so we're white-knuckling it. And really the problem is we still want to use. We still want to sin. We still want to do that behavior. Otherwise, it's real easy to stop doing something if you don't want to do it. I mean, like I quit working years ago. That was no problem because I didn't want to do it anymore.
Right. I think it was Dr. Tim Walsh who we had on a couple of weeks ago talking about the white-knuckling approach never works. As a matter of fact, it makes it worse. I mean, you have to have a greater love in place. You have to take something off and put something on. Because if you just try to get through another cycle of not using it by white-knuckling, you will fail.
Right. And the other thing is the problem isn't our using. The problem is us.
Mm-hmm.
We have a heart. We need a heart transplant. And Tim talked about the heart is desperately wicked. Who can know it? I think it's Jeremiah 17. And what we are doing is we need to trust that God is going to change this. And the humility comes in. My way didn't work. And we go to the Calvinists on this, on the total depravity. My basic problem, Bill, is me, and that I want to do what I want to do instead of what God wants me to do. And part of our sanctification process is by working the steps. We don't work the steps for any other reason that they point us to Christ, mm-hmm. that how badly I need a Savior.
So, George, you talked about humility. What does humility look like in a good recovery plan?
Humility in a good recovery plan. Well, how would I know? A good recovery program.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a great recovery plan.
I think it's because I realize how messed up and needy I am. You know, I talk a lot about I don't know
That's
anybody.
Humility then, right?
He needs a Savior more than I do. Yeah, I think the proper relationship, Bill, and when we first met, you asked me, why don't you ever speak on holiness? And I think that was right. And I said, I don't know. For me, the humility is that I really don't know, because if I look at my addiction years, I was doing what I wanted to do, and it was killing me. Therefore, I really don't know what I want. One of your guests the other week on your program in the afternoon, Dr. Glenn Pickering, a good friend of Real Recoveries, said the biggest problem is people don't know what they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's life's most dangerous question. What do you want?
Yes.
And if you don't know that, you spend the rest of your life looking for it. And if you don't have God in your life, you will always be looking for that substitute.
So really, the question should be for us, what does God want from me
mm-hmm.
and for me? And so that's what we're looking at. And I think keeping the humility is realizing I'm not God. There is a God. It's not me. And I'm here to serve him rather than have God serve me. And I think for a lot of us, we talked about that. I want to have this relationship with Jesus so I get the car, the job, keep my family. You know, what do I get out of it? And it's a little prosperity gospel. You had talked about my illness before. I think for both of us, when we were going through the diagnostic procedure, because you were driving me, you were such a great friend.
I was paying for all that gas, too.
Yeah, well, you had the Prius.
It doesn't matter.
I wore that. Remember, I had that brown bag over my head so nobody would see me riding in your car. But do you remember that we kind of thought I'd be okay because mm-hmm. I'm a Christian and we're good guys? And
yeah.
I wouldn't verbalize that, but there's kind of that. Isn't there a prosperity gospel?
Absolutely. You feel like you've got this little hedge of protection around you, and that may not be the case.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, George, we're off to another award-winning episode of Real Recovery from what I can observe in this opening monologue. I think it's good so far.
Yeah.
But it's only going to get better when we bring Jay on.
I'm
Jay's going
to
be our guest. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, Jay, our guest, will be with us on our studio line. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill and George, Ted on the board. We'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Awful glad you're joining us tonight. If you are just new to the program, we're so glad you've joined us. And if you're looking for encouragement in recovery, whatever it is you're struggling with, you have come to the right place. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, we've got Ted Ross on the board.
Yeah. Good to have you, Ted.
Anyway, I'd like to welcome to the program our friend Jay, who is a full-time recovery pastor at the Genesis Project in Ogden, Utah. Jay, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
And we're so glad you're still on the line, because we never know after that opening segment if our guest is still going to be with us.
Yeah, I'm sure he was tempted.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, Jay, we'd love to hear a little bit about how you grew up and where you grew up and how you started to even experiment with things that were going to alter your mind.
Yeah. So for me, man, I'm from Ogden, Utah, born and raised really my whole life. But I didn't grow up just to kind of set that stage. I didn't grow up in church. We didn't grow to anything, or I wasn't told about Jesus or nothing. So I never had God in my life as a kid or even a young adult until I was 20 years old. But and I just grew up really fast in a rough life, experiencing a lot of abuse and struggles from the age of 10. I had my nose broke for my stepdad, and my mom became a single mom with me and my brother. Where we just ran around the trailer court, owned the trailer court we lived in for those 2 years from 10 to 12, and experienced sex really early, was molested, started drinking. I mean, by the age of 12, I can't honestly tell you how it all just started just so fast. But by the age of 12, I had been doing things that 12-year-olds shouldn't do, you know? And so, I started drinking and smoking weed and having sex by the age of 12.
Okay.
And just grew up really fast.
Okay, Jay. We just got to hit pause here for a second. So when you say that you were doing that by 12 years old, you grew up really fast. And you're no longer a boy anymore. You're a boy doing adult things. Am I right, George?
Right.
No, I was thinking, what were we in, Little League?
Little League.
We
and
still
going
are
and watching
kind of
Batman.
Yeah. Wow. So your childhood's gone, and did you harden up? Did that kind of harden you?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, just being so young, I think I can't look back and think. I don't think you understand, you know, too well. You don't know. You're confused. I was really confused. You know, I didn't know what was. A lot of things that were happening, they just kind of went with the flow and not having that guidance or support, or especially faith, right?
Yeah.
Jay, you're just lost.
Jay, who is your advocate? You're a 12-year-old boy being molested. Who is your advocate? Who do you go to for safety?
For me, my older brother is really who, he's 4 years older than me. Which even then we had different dads. I mean, just broken family. But my older brother really is who I always kind of had with me. But even then, him being young with me would do a lot of those things with me. But, yeah, I'd say my older brother went to a lot for things. But when you're both kind of just living that, you know, together, really no one. I mean, you know?
And was there other activity going on in your little neighborhood, in the park, the trailer park you were in? Did it seem like it was happening more than in just your world?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, just so fast and stuff. I don't really remember too much.
I'm not surprised. You know, when you have that level of trauma being brought into your body at that young age, you don't remember stuff. You have to sort of piece stuff together as best you can. It just doesn't work that well.
Well, you're not enjoying life. You're surviving.
Yeah, it is survival.
That's right.
You just get through it. How was it at school for you then?
Okay. I think I did all right in school. I remember starting to really get in trouble, just kind of being that outcast or not paying attention and sloughing and those kind of things. Yeah, I'd say probably by the time I was 12. I think school really wasn't affected until middle school for me.
It's just, it takes a minute to absorb that for me, Bill.
Me too,
it's,
George. It's like, I got quiet all of a sudden.
All,
yeah,
of a
we
sudden,
both did.
All of a sudden, my life stops, and I'm an adult, but I'm still 12. And at school, pretty normal till the middle school. What happened then?
Well, my mom, so she got married again when I was 12. And man, here in Ogden, the trailer court I grew up in on 12th Street, to 32nd Street, so 32 blocks south, is a whole different culture, a whole different area in Ogden. We had moved with my new dad to 32nd Street, which, if you're from Ogden, you know that's as a Caucasian family, we moved into a Hispanic neighborhood, and so I became minority. From 12 to 14, which was okay. I was accepted and loved, but it became very hard for me in Ogden, where on 32nd Street was just downtown Ogden, man, just right where a lot of gangs and just a rough neighborhood. And so from 12 to 14, I really got lost. I think everything that I went through, and then having different fathers and just living that lifestyle, really started hitting me. So by the time I was 14, I really rebelled. You know, that's when school, I made it to ninth grade at Ogden High School and was arrested at the high school. And I don't even remember why. I don't remember what happened. I started running around with the wrong crowd, and we'd rob houses. And just it was pretty bad, man. But by the time I was 14, like I said, is when my life dramatically had changed. So.
Is part of that because nobody honored you with the normal rules? You weren't going to honor their rules?
Yep, exactly. I mean, like I said, going from one section of town and the culture that I lived in with my mom, you know, we didn't have structure. I didn't have a dad to come home and tell me, you know, what to do or get in trouble. And so I think definitely when we moved and lived with my dad, which to me, I love my dad, Rick Salas. That's my father to me today very much. But different culture, you know, you listened to him, you respected him, you did what he said. And so, I mean, for me, total rebellion, total, like, why are you telling me what to do? Or even the culture I lived in, it was just so easy for me to run around and not care, you know, not know who I was.
Jay, what authority did you fear or respect at 14?
None.
Okay.
I don't think any.
Yeah, I was thinking that was going to be the answer.
Yeah. I think you become more fearful, you know, as far as, like, you know, the cops. Like, I didn't respect police. I didn't respect the law, but I was more fearful to get in trouble of the law. So this, I don't know if that makes sense, right? But
does to me.
I mean, you definitely have a fear.
Yeah, you, but you're so angry. Nobody's telling me what to do, right? And, you know, we talk about that in Proverbs, Bill, the mocker and the fool. But here, everybody that he could have trusted pretty much has turned against him. So he's turning against everybody. And you don't trust anybody. And it's like you're at war with life, correct?
Yeah, correct. Absolutely.
So how much trouble were you getting in? And what were some of the examples?
Man, it turned out pretty bad. I, at 14, my dad made the decision to tell my mom, you know, that was enough. And I don't blame him, you know, like, it was pretty bad. I was a bad dude, man. And he told my mom, you know, it's him or me, like, made the decision to either I had to go live somewhere else or they were going to get a divorce. And my mom decided, you know, that wasn't going to happen. And man, I love my mom. We get along so good today. But back then, I didn't understand that. You know, to me, back then, she turned her back on me for the first time, which was the only person I had left in my life that I could love or whatever, right? And so, and I've been on my own since I was 14 years old, and I ended up just bouncing around the streets of Ogden, which back then there was really two prominent gangs here that I grew up with and was friends with, and I would bounce back and forth with each side until they got mad at me. And told me I had to make a decision, you know, I had to either be with this side or that side. And then I ended up choosing a side. within months. And this all happened really fast for me, probably within 6 months, 5 to 6 months, once I chose my side and found my identity in that. Now, this is who I'm going to be. This is going to be my family. I'm a gangster now. This is who I am. Like, I dropped out of school, like I said, ninth grade. I barely made it ninth grade. But we decided, anyway, to rob a pawn shop to get some guns. I was fearful for my life from the other side as well. And so I thought, man, that's a good idea. We'll rob this pawn shop. I'll sell some guns. I'll keep a gun to protect myself from the other side. We did it. We robbed the pawn shop. And within weeks, we had been driving down the boulevard, me and another guy. You know, I'm passenger. I'm only 14. I think he was 21. I don't remember. But we were driving down 1 or 2 in the morning when the rival gang caught up to us. And a man tried to block us in with a couple of vehicles. And pretty cool. This is the first time in my life, part of my testimony, first time I ever experienced anything supernatural. And I had these guys pull up on the side of me, and I got scared, and I pulled my gun out, lane to lane, maybe 2 miles an hour, at this other person hanging out behind the driver. He was hanging out the window and just threw his arms up in the air as I pointed my gun at him and said, if you're going to shoot me, then shoot me. And man, time just stopped for me. I didn't recognize it as a 14-year-old who didn't believe in God or anything. But man, time definitely, something happened. I believe God was there, man. And everything in me said, Jay, do you want to shoot this person? And I thought to myself, I don't want to shoot him. I don't want to do this. And then I thought, which I believe absolutely God was right there, just spoke into my heart and says, you don't have to do this. It's okay. You didn't cock the gun. It's okay. And I thought, being a knucklehead that I was, I thought, okay, well, then I'm going to pull the trigger and scare him. And so I pulled the trigger. And at that very second, everything just was kind of normal and nothing happened, which totally had no clue if I really cocked it or not, if it was cocked or not, but nothing happened. I pulled the trigger. He bounces. But then I got scared. I closed my eyes, cocked it, and we just fired rounds out the car. I didn't even look. I have no idea what happens. A couple weeks go by, and, man, we just got raided by the gang force and the police. And only for me, at 14 years old, I was taken to the adult jail on 25th Street and charged with attempted murder because my bullet had ricocheted off the concrete, went through the door, and hit him in the leg, and he was in the hospital.
Wow. Jay, I'm going to have to take a break here. When we come back, we will continue this story, which is – has George and me kind of we're gripped.
Yes.
And George is learning a new word tonight called, is it cocked?
Cocked
his gun? Cocked his gun?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'm learning a new word too.
Good time for a commercial.
You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill and George, we'll get back in just a minute more with Jay. Welcome back to the show. Real Recovery is live and underway tonight. We're talking to Jay, and he has got a story that is where I'm holding on, George, at the end of my seat.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So 14 years old, left home, living on his own in a rival gang. George, at 14, you were playing Little League baseball, weren't you?
Junior League. Starring, would you have one of those banana seat stingray bicycles?
Oh, of course I did. Of course I did.
With the ring, ring on it.
Yeah, of course I did.
Okay.
Don't talk down to me. Anyway, so Jay, you're now in an adult facility at age 14. I don't care how tough you are. That's horrifying.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely scary. Yeah.
And are the inmates looking at you going, oh, this poor kid, or are they seeing you as a gang person and they're going to treat you just like every other inmate? I'm just trying to figure out how you're feeling, what's going on, how you're being treated.
They can't put you in population, so I wasn't put in a cell at the jail, at the adult jail.
Okay.
Man, I just spent the night there as they were scaring me, letting me know that I had shot someone and they were going to charge me with attempted murder and I was going to go to prison at 14. And so this was a trial. So I went through trial. I ended up going through, so they put me back, or they put me into detention, high max. There's a detention here. It's not even a detention. It's kind of a youth prison here in Ogden that's max security for people under 18, for minors who have committed serious crimes or gangs or stuff like that. And so I stayed there for, I think it was 9 months, 8 months for trial. I ended up going to the state prison here in Utah. We call it the Point of the Mountain, for 3 months for diagnostics, where they just, it's 23-hour lockdown. They don't put you as population because you're a minor. So to charge a minor with attempted murder, you'd have to be certified as an adult back then. And so this is a long process. So for the next year of my life, till I was 15, I was in prison for 3 months for diagnostics and then locked up in a youth prison for 9 months before they deemed me not okay to stay here in Ogden because of that they were scared that something could happen to me from the rival gang. I don't really remember much of the trial. Again, you're a kid. You know, I'm a minor. I don't understand a lot what's happening, and they don't tell you a lot of it as a minor. And so I just know that prison sucked. It was very scary for 3 months, even though I wasn't in population and stuff like that, man. And they take me out of Ogden, so they sent me to a Proctor home in southern Utah, which means I'm in state custody, right? So not a foster home, but Proctor is that you are now state custody at 15 until you're 18. And if I get in any trouble at all, I'm going to prison. So I'm 25 for attempted murder. And so that's the outcome that happened.
Okay, so were you on good behavior for those 3 years?
Yeah, I was, man. Prison scared me. Like, it was enough. Even though I wasn't in population, you're there at the adult prison. And so you can hear people on the other side of the wall, man, just screaming and telling you what they're going to do to you and who you are and these kind of things. So, man, it scared me enough that I did my best to stay out. But, man, I always struggled with addiction and lust and just those things. From 12 years old, you know, from 10, really. But I did pretty good. I met my wife. Man, we're happily going to celebrate 24 years of marriage this June, by the grace of God. I met her when I was 17 down in southern Utah, my wife had been, a part of her testimony is she was raped. When I met her, she had a 6-month-old baby. And I just fell in love with both of them. It gave me something that I wanted to live for and just do. You know, I'm going to marry you when I turn 18 and take care of you. And this is just what I did. I got married. We had our second child right at 18. But, man, I took all of that into my adulthood. You know, I became very physically abusive to my wife. When I would get mad, I would hit. I was right back into getting high at 18. And cheating, running around. I mean, I took all of my childhood into my adulthood, man. As soon as I turned 18, I got arrested with a pound, 11 ounces of weed in St. George in southern Utah. And just continued the cycle. I was introduced to meth. I think by the time I was 20 years old, I started doing meth and having an actual same-sex relationship with my dealer, man, for drugs. And for about a year long, by the time I was 21, I had been on probation since I was 18 from when I got in trouble. I violated 9 times. My teeth were starting to fall out from meth. I think I weighed 110 pounds. Yeah, it was pretty bad. My wife, we had 3 kids now. We had kids pretty quick. And I just dragged her along in all of that. It ended up doing, man, I didn't even meet our youngest child, my son, when he was born. For 6 months because I violated. I flipped out in the hospital that he wasn't mine and ended up going to jail for another 6 months in southern Utah for violating. So it was pretty bad, man.
It sounds really bad. You know, just when I thought things were getting better, they got worse. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good call, Bill.
Well,
yeah, so I'm like, you're still alive here and you sound normal and positive. What happened?
Yeah, I want to find out exactly yeah. how
well,
God reached down.
What's that?
I'm just dying to hear how God reaches down and
yeah,
gets a hold of Jay.
Yeah. The cool thing with my wife, it's crazy because my wife, she's pure Navajo from Tuba City, Arizona, man, from a reservation. So like, she didn't even speak English until she was 7. And she had been given away to some Navajo pastors down there, Christian pastors down there. And so she grew up in the church. She grew up knowing about Jesus and these things. But even to her, she never had a real relationship with Christ. It was what her adopted family, she calls them her grandma and grandpa, who have since passed. Man, they're awesome. They were awesome. That's what they did on Sunday, you know? Like, she never shared to me about Jesus. We didn't go to church, those kind of things. I always teased my wife. She was like an undercover Christian, you know? Like, she would pray, and I didn't even know, and these kind of things. And so it's pretty cool through all of that. I know my wife is praying for us and just had faith in God. But for me, yeah, I didn't even know nothing, man. I had no idea. And going through all of those things, and violating, I went to rehab 4.5 times down in southern Utah. It just came to a point, I think I was 24, because I was on probation 4.5 years, where they told me they were going to send me to prison. I violate, because this is the 4-3 strikes rule or anything, that I was going to go to prison if I violated again. And that scared me enough, because I'd been there as a kid enough to where I just was always scared of prison. So I stopped. I did what I had to do, pay off my stuff. Finished all the program stuff I had, and then we moved back to Ogden to change my life. Well, that never changed. And so to kind of speed this up, you know, just the same stuff, abuse, drugs. I couldn't stop, man. Nothing. Could not stop abusing my wife, getting high, no matter how much we bounced and moved, different areas. We lived on the res for 3 months. I mean, we bounced around so much. And it came to where I was 28 years old, about 12, 13 years ago. We lost everything. My parents ended up taking our kids from us. We let them have the kids. My wife started getting high for the first time and running around. We lost everything, man. All we had a mattress, and we moved into my cousin's trailer with just our mattress. And, man, all of that takes a toll on you, right? Like, I just wanted to die. I didn't want to live no more. I hated life. And I thought, man, the only way I can die is through drugs. I can OD. I know how to do dope. And I'm going to be dope until I die. I had a dealer going out of town and asked me to stay at his house. And so, man, I remember like yesterday when he asked me if I could bulldog, is what he said, bulldog my house for 2 weeks. My first thought in my mind was, I'm dying in your basement this weekend. And, man, I tried. And so that's what changed. That's the beginning of the change for me to know God, man. I was always scared of needles, but I knew how to smoke heroin, you know, and I just did all the meth and heroin that he had. I just remember smoking anything and everything I could smoke in his basement until I just passed out. And as I passed out and lost body function, if you know how that goes, right, I just hit the ground and I'm losing my fluids and I'm looking at the wall. I just started talking to God. I didn't see him or hear him. Never have. But I just, if he was there, man, I started talking to the wall, and my first response was, the literally first response to God that I had was, I flipped off the wall and said, I hated you. I hate you. I hate you. Where have you been? Who are you? And then I remember crying, I love you. Like, who are you? And that's really all I can remember. I woke up, and I had two things stuck into my heart, you guys, that God planted in my heart. He said, if you choose me, I'll never let you go. And to never quit quitting, which both of those things made no sense to me. I thought, he just denied me. How can I choose you when you just denied me, you know? Like, you just denied me and never quit quitting. If I could quit anything, I would have quit, man. That's the problem. I can't quit. But I nodded on those things for, like, just were planted in my heart for, like, 6 months. And I kept telling my wife and people I'm getting high with, you know, that, man, I'm going to follow God. I'm going to give my life to God. I wouldn't tell nobody what happened because it's none of their business. You know, nobody knew what happened. I thought, no, that's between me and God. And finally, just, I couldn't do it, you know. I couldn't get my – I thought I had to get my sins together. I got to hide all my tattoos. I have no teeth. Like, no, but I can't go into a church. Even though God met me in the basement of my dealer's house trying to kill myself, I just couldn't get past the idea that I had to go to a church and clean up, which I couldn't do. And then finally one day, we just did. We just turned. I was sober in that moment. We turned into a church. We weren't the Genesis Project yet. It didn't exist yet. But I turned into this church and went in. And I don't know when I got there. It had been toward the end. And I just heard that pastor say, if you choose Jesus, he'll never let you go, man. And I freaked out. I ran down there and yelled at him and said, that's me, man. That's me. Like, that's me. What do I do? You know, and I said a Lord's Prayer, and I went home yelling to God, okay, now what? Where are you? but within that week, man, I learned really quick it's not about religion or certain verbiage, right, that it's a heart condition. And just begged Christ into my heart. I just chose Jesus. I didn't even believe in Jesus, man. I hated him. I hated all of that. And I, wow. But I wanted it. I wanted it to be real. I knew what happened to me would be was real. And I just wanted it. I just remember saying, God, I want this to be real. I choose you when I don't even believe. And, man, he wrecked my world. He didn't. My life didn't change perfectly yet, and it still hasn't.
Yeah.
But he destroyed my world in the most beautiful, crazy way.
Oh, well, Jay, it's just phenomenal. Let me take one more break. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with Jay. You're listening to Real Recovery, and what an award-winning episode we have underway. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. I hope you're enjoying tonight's show. If you missed any of this, you got to go back and listen from the very beginning, because there are details and layers and nuances and stuff that I've never heard all put in one story, George, of you.
It's amazing that God can do anything, and I can't wait to hear what the rest of it is.
Yeah, yeah. So when we last left off, Jay, you had gone to a church and you had said, this is me, and you had prayed a prayer, and then you went home screaming at God. So what happened next?
Man, I just, like I was saying, I just learned really quick to surrender my heart to him. I just wanted it to be real, and man, I just stepped back from trying to say the right words or look the right way and just accepted Christ as my Lord and Savior between me and him. And man, he just wrecked my world. Things changed for me, and I share this with people all the time. God healed me from addiction 12 years ago. I haven't struggled. I have had no desire in the last 12 and a half years, whatever it is, with wanting to get high and be that guy like that I used to be. And I believe not because I'm better than nobody, not because I deserved it at all, but because God had a plan for me to do what I do today that I could have. I think actually because I'm worse. I think God had to heal me because he wanted me to run a race and I didn't have the capacity. I couldn't do it. But, man, we're not, as you guys know, we're not promised perfect lives or whatever. And so, man, when that all happened, my world did change. It was absolutely amazing. I came into a real relationship with Jesus Christ. But, man, I still struggle with anger. So it was this weird time of my life. I had met our lead pastor, Matt, of the Genesis Project in a coffee shop. I started going to that church. I got saved at, which was really a legalistic style church. I had a lot of tattoos and like I said, had no teeth. I wasn't getting high no more, cheating on my wife, but I was still abusing her and stuff like that, which nobody knew, you know, like I hid that side of it. And the church that I went to, they were, I think I was too much or something, like I could never fit, plug in anywhere, and I always got pushed to the side, you know, like it was just really uncomfortable where I was. And so I got really confused in this new walk with God. But I heard of the coffee shop, man, called a church for people who don't do church, on Friday nights that Matt preached at. And I thought, man, I want to go check that out. I want to go there. And so one night I just went and that dude just loved me. I mean, today, man, he's absolutely one of my very best friends. But he didn't judge me. He didn't hate me. He loved me, and encouraged me. And then when I would go, all of a sudden, next thing I know, we're planning a church called the Genesis Project right here in Ogden. And now I'm becoming this guy who's at home struggling with abusing my wife still with no desire to get high or cheat on her, but I would still get angry. I had still this anger issue, you know? And, man, that lasted for about 4 years as our church grew and we have our own building and all these things are happening. And I started feeling like a hypocrite, you know, like I started really hating life and like I didn't understand God. I started getting mad at God. Like, God, why are you messed up? I remember having a conversation with God one day, telling him he messed up. Man, I want to be an addict again. I want to struggle with addiction. Please take my anger away. Like, you messed up, you know? And it was my son, who was 15 at the time, who had stepped up to me. He got mad at me. And for a split-second choice in my mind, I thought, I'm going to hit him. I'm going to put him in his place, and he'll never do that to me again. And I hit my son. This was like 8 years ago, whatever. I hit my son, and he fell and hit his head on a bookshelf. When I knocked him out. He hit the bookshelf, and his scalp, man, it ripped his whole top of his scalp off. He had 19 staples. And in that split second when my son fell on the ground and blood, I mean, it just blood poured down his face. I just had a thought in my mind. I believe that God just gave me a thought in my mind. I pictured him on the cross, Jesus on the cross, and I'm drilling nails into his hand. And he smiled at me and said, Jay, I love you. It's okay. I didn't mess up. It's not about you, man. This is my story, not your story. Like, I don't know. He just touched my heart that, Jay, I'm just selfish. I'm missing it because I'm so selfish. It's not about me. Like, I'm hurting him, you know, like to just love. I don't know. Just wrecked my heart. And it was pretty crazy, pretty cool. That's the last time I ever hit anybody in my life. And it just changed in me to, like, let God, just God's grace. I think because God chose to love me and give me grace in those moments, it changed everything in me, you know? Just changed my heart.
Yeah. Jay, it's quite – oh, go ahead.
No, it's good. It's just – yeah, you're good.
It's such a remarkable story of redemption that I am just listening to you and kind of thinking your past life – you were like a monster.
Absolutely. Yep. A very selfish. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean,
fast forward to today, right?
Like, yeah.
That's what I do. It's amazing. So we started one night. I got asked to do, go into the youth, the youth correction center, right? Matt asked me, says, man, because he knew I'd been there, right? And the first thing I did in ministry was I went there. And, I mean, the very place I was, man, the very place I was, God created purpose and reason in my life to go into, man. And I remember being in there for like 2 months struggling with, why am I even here? Like, I don't think this is what I'm supposed to do. And one of older guy than me, comes up to me and says, what's your name? And I says, it's Jay Salas. And he says, no, that's not it. And I'm like, what's happening, you know? No, it is. I says, well, I've been adopted 3 times, man. So, like, I went back to him. Well, it used to be England. And he says, that's it. He says, come here. Takes me to his office and shows me pictures of the car door with a bullet hole in it. And says, I was the arresting officer for you when you were 14 years old. I was going to charge you. And I fought for you to be charged as the first RICO case in Utah, which is organized. I almost went to prison for a long time when I was 14. And he looked at me and he said, you got to keep doing what you're doing. You're supposed to be here. And, you know, it blows my mind that God, just the grace and the love of God is everything. You know, like, we don't have to have it figured out. We don't have to. I don't have to play the part. I don't have to look the right part. I just have to show up in spite of me and let God do it all, you know. And it's changed my world, like. I don't beat my wife no more. I haven't in a year. I don't struggle the way I used to, and I'm not perfect at all. My mind thinks of all of these things a lot, you know? But it's the consequence of the relationship I have with him that has changed my life. You know, I would have never imagined my life being full-time ministry. I never even heard of a recovery pastor. Mm-hmm. Like, how does that work? Right, and now that's what I do. I go into jail twice a week, sometimes to prison. I'm talking to people all the time, and all I'm doing is sharing Jesus. People ask me all the time, I want what you have. So you want to tell my story, like, whoa, bro, like, I want what you have. I'm that guy. And I'm like, yeah, I have Jesus, man. I have a personal – what did you do, Jay, to change your life? What did you do to stop being that monster, that guy? I didn't do anything. I accepted God's grace, and I let him love me, forgive me, and walk with me to this very day. He's changing everything.
Well, Jay, here's a verse Ted prompted to have me read to you. It's out of 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 17. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has gone, the new has come. I think that applies to you.
Yeah, amen, absolutely.
You know, it's really interesting to think about that verse and the truth that it is, but also to look at how God works, Bill, and that no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see that our experience can benefit others, that God doesn't help us get saved and sober without having a job for us to do.
That's right.
And that gets reinforced when you go back to visit these guys. And the arresting officer is there. That just says to me loud and clear, this is God. I'm here right now. I've been here the whole time. And I allowed you to go your way. And now I got a job for you. And that's as good as it gets for me. That is fabulous.
That's right. Yeah.
And I look at some of the people in the Old Testament. You look at Moses. He was a hothead and a murderer. Paul was a Christian, or in the New Testament, Paul was a Christian killer and was very difficult to work with. David, an adulterer and a murderer. You think of all the grievous sins that we can commit and the offenses that we can commit against other people in this world, and yet God will still show us grace.
That's right.
Paul was difficult to work with?
Yeah.
You think Paul was?
Well, not as difficult as you.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. See, Jay, you do this once. I have to do this every week. You know, I envy you.
You know, I think for me to hear this, Jay, has helped me so much in my recovery because I get to, you know, we just talked about this before the show, seeing God work through guys and getting to hear this. Bill, this was a strong story.
George, I will say in the 8 years we've been doing this, I don't think I've heard so many elements put together in one story.
Right.
This is like sensory overload, and I know I'll have to think about this in the coming week and certainly give God the glory for what he's done in Jay's life and with his wife and family, and the ministry he has in front of him now is truly, truly spectacular.
Yeah, it's great to hear it. Thank you for sharing it, Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, guys.
So, Jay, just in the minute we have left, what kind of word do you have for someone that's listening tonight who's just in that angry mode? Because anger is something that maybe all of us have.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would say, I know for me, just like I was saying, choosing to surrender it, knowing I think the biggest thing that changed my heart, that softened my heart, it's not about me, you know? It's not about – this isn't our story. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not going to tell the story of Jay through eternity, man. Right. You know, it's the story of Jesus, the story of God and his great love and his great grace. And man, just to recognize how big and wonderful God's love. God's not scared of us, man. God is not scared of you. God is not intimidated by you, and there's nothing he hasn't seen, you know? And I think that's my story. I think God has allowed me. I don't believe that God's done those things. He's allowed me to do the things I've done so that he can create purpose and reason in my life. And I tell people all the time here, everything doesn't happen for a reason. God makes purpose and reason out of everything that happens.
Jay, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
That wraps up our show. Have a great week, everyone. Good night, and God bless. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.